Hey folks, welcome back to, well, which one is this? Indaba Africa? Chris White Reports. I guess it's a Chris White Reports presentation. This is Chris, and in honor of our guest today, I'm wearing a Sharks jersey. Sharks with an unbelievable comeback a short while ago in Nelspruit at Umbombela Stadium there, where they came back against the Pumas and stole a victory at the death knell, 24-22. The Sharks move up the log in Curry Cup. Well done for them. But my guest today is none other than Brandi Wells. Last time I checked, I think she's from South Africa. Is that correct?
Yeah. South Africa.
There you go. There you go.
Hello, Brandi, everyone.
Welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you on the program with me.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited. I've got so much stuff to talk about, really.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's tough. You know, John's had me on his program a few times now. And I think the last time there, we could have used about six more hours just to talk about South Africa. And I'm sure you and I could talk about it for ages. But, you know, you and I were talking off air just before we got started. And you were mentioning a headline in South Africa today, which I'm aware of. Something about South Africans will be the first to know when there's a collapse of the grid.
Yeah. I mean, how insightful. Let me read it in the John B. Wells voice. You want that?
Yeah, please okay. Do.
All right, I'm going to read the headline to you. South Africans will be the first to know when the power grid collapses, says Cyril Ramaphosa. I mean, really? What a load of, like, duh. When the lights go out, I'm sure we'll know. Oh, look, it's here. Come say hello. It's John B.
Hey, folks, it's John B. Wells. John, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, there's that distinctive voice. There's that voice that makes you want to get a cup of coffee around the campfire in the morning. I'm doing well, John. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Have a good show.
Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Well, that was quick in and out. Boy, I'll tell you what. So he was just your beverage delivery guy. That's what he was.
Oh, yeah. He made me coffee. How sweet is that?
Wow, that is very sweet. Very sweet. I will tell people there were some unnecessary public displays of affection behind the scenes that I saw, but we won't get into that. But Brandi, listen, it is great to get you on. We've been talking about you coming on for some time to talk about South African. Actually, this all started because someone told me that you were trying to reach me. This is a long time ago, and I don't know why. Maybe I came to your attention or something like that. And I said, but I don't know how to reach Brandi Wells or John B. Wells, you know, and somehow we got in touch. And then you invited me onto the program and I went on John's show and I really enjoyed it. And, you know, he's a busy guy. We got lots of guests on the program. Then I came back on again. It's been a very interesting experience for me. You know, it's interesting. I don't recall the whole genesis of it, but someone said, you know, you should go on John B. Wells. And then like, you know, his wife, Brandi. I'm like, no, I don't. I just know a rather unfortunate scene I saw once upon a time on a program where you know, little teddy bears are get burned alive eating eucalyptus leaves. Anyway, I'm just saying.
Are you talking about Loving Life?
No. I'm sorry. You've confused it. I think the actual name is Loving Lunacy. I mean, that's
oh, gotcha. Yeah, no. Yeah, it's like moron.
Yeah, no, and I didn't know of you before that, of course, because, you know, look, I'm a Province fan, never a Sharks fan. So there you go. How's that? A little better? There we go. That's a little better. Now we got
there
a studio.
You go.
All right. So I'm not a Sharks fan. It's just full disclosure. I'm just wearing this out of respect, knowing that you used to work with the organization. I'm a Province.
If I'd known that, I would have worn my Sharks shirt too.
You look lovely. That's fine. You don't need your Sharks jersey. I got it covered. So that was interesting. Do you happen to recall what happened? I mean, did I relate the story correctly? I mean, I don't remember reaching out to you. I think I heard from you first.
Yeah, I got hold of you because I saw one of your South African reports and I thought, wow, this will be good because it's not always easy to bring somebody on. I think to a large extent, Chris, it's because there's so much that I'm experiencing in America right now that I've already been through in South Africa. What I say to people here, it's like I'm in the twilight zone, because think about it. Our Mandela moment was a communist takeover in blackface. It's all it was. And it was the same as your Biden moment. It was a contrived, planned takeover. And that's what happened. And it all comes in the name of love, peace, freedom, rainbows, and butterflies and all that nonsense. But at the end of the day, it is a communist takeover. And at the time, now you need to understand that when all of this was happening in South Africa in the 80s, in the early 90s, we didn't have social media like we have it today. We didn't have the YouTubes, the Facebooks. We couldn't tell people what was going on. All we knew is that we were branded these horrible, utter racists, and we are just the scum of the earth. And then they started killing us. But how did they do that? They opened the borders. So what's happening now in America? They're opening the borders, and here they come. There's a reason that in 1948, when the National Party took over, there was about 5 million white people in the country and about 6 million black people. How did it arrive to the number that it is today? 70 million black people, and there's still only 5 million white people. So how did that happen? You think it was just a massive breeding program? Or
no,
it was
coincidence. It's sheer
coincidence.
They
opened the borders.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then what they did is they just started to infiltrate the neighborhoods. And at night when people sleep, that's when these mugs come out. And they just start killing you. And I remember back in 2014 when I was writing letters to the UN and everybody thinking somebody's going to come and help us. I didn't understand that they were part of the problem, that they were actually the engineers of all of it.
The United Nations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's look, Brandy, you have all these organizations that claim that they're do-gooders or doing good things for people. Here in America, you have the American Civil Liberties Union, which I prefer to call the American Criminal Liberties Union. They only seem concerned with convicted felons' rights and privileges and not the victims of crime and those we want to prevent from being victims. You've got the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is nothing but a racist organization intended to destroy race relations. But internationally, I mean, you've got organizations, non-government organizations based in the U.S. that are supposed to care about these things, like Human Rights Watch. You know, the number of reports that Human Rights Watch wrote about the racist attacks on commercial farmers in Zimbabwe, I could count on one hand. Yet they go on and on about America being an unjust society because we have a death penalty, but not every state has one. And then you've got, of course, you've got other organizations like that. You've got Amnesty International that gets all wrapped up about events that really are of little significance while they ignore what's going on. You know, a lot of the world is trapped in 1994. A few years ago when I started doing these broadcasts and I talked, because, you know, I was an intelligence officer, I was doing this behind the scenes in a classified environment. And unlike Hillary Clinton, I don't disclose classified information, so we won't be able to talk about that. But, and apparently National Guard, Air National Guardmen from Massachusetts too. I told people that the problem is that the world views South Africa through a lens of April 27th, 1994. John's trying to slip by. I can see him.
Yeah. I was like, oh, baby, they can
see. We have an insurgency. There's an insurgency. Hey, listen, is that the EFF behind you? I'm just checking.
He's trying not to be noticed. But
he's got the cigarette. We're going to do a South African advert for smokes here in a moment.
Well, he was the Lexington man.
Okay? I know. That's why we're going to do it.
He was the Lexington man, and he's still the Lexington man.
Yeah, well, I think I've got to clean the pool now. Pool. I'll be back later.
All right, Josh. Oh, that was too funny. I had
his
to say something.
His shoes way over
fine.
Your...
You know, I had to say something. He thought he'd slip by. I had to say something because my audience would have commented in the chat. No doubt about it.
Usually it happens to John. The dog does it. You know, the dog comes in behind him in the ears and everybody comments, oh, there's Charlie. I never thought it would be, oh, there's John B. with a cigarette.
Well, there you have it. History in the making. We've had already a great program. It can only go downhill from here, Brandy. So
No. Let's not go there. That's all kidding. In the mind.
No, seriously. So, but the world, when the world looks at South Africa, they completely ignore everything that's happened since 1994. It's Rainbow Nation, Kumbaya. It's all over. The evil racist regime has been eliminated. Yet we have a regime that sits in office, has implemented more race-based laws than the previous government did. And they do it to the expense of the minority. When I talk about the minority, I'm talking about white South Africans. I'm talking about brown South Africans. And is there a cat on the screen now?
It's the dog. Sorry, just ignore it. No, okay. Just don't look at what's going on.
This is like the Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, the great and powerful Oz. No, but
the
seriously,
dogs, the husbands, you know.
It's next thing you know, it'll be EFF march around. But seriously, yeah. So the world looks at it through a lens of that. They ignore what's happened, the racial legislation, the at the expense of minorities, whites, blacks, browns, and because black South Africans are the ones suffer from this racist legislation. It's absolutely crazy. But the real victims, initial victims, are white South Africans, colored South Africans, and Indian South Africans who are discriminated against on a daily basis in government tenders, in university entrance, all sorts of things. It is vicious and horrible. Look, racism is a racism. There's no such thing as reverse racism. Racism is racism. And the South African government practices racism against its own citizens and denies it. You know, it's crazy.
But you know, Chris, that is so true. I mean, just take the fact that when South Africa, when Van Riebeeck landed on the Cape Point in 1562, I think 1652.
1650. No, I have to correct you. I know.
51.
No, it wasn't 1652. I have it on good information from a African National Congress member of parliament that when the whites came here 2,000 years ago.
So oh, yeah, was, of yeah, course.
2,000 years ago. Yeah, apparently a little bit of math problem there. But yes, 1652.
It's common core math.
Yeah. You stole my line. That's what I always say, common core math. But yes, Jan van Riebeck, Jan is the ultimate. I mean, he's the one who started all this.
I think it was 1652, 1651.
That's correct. 1652. Yeah. 1652.
Right. So when he landed there, it's not like he took the N2 and drove down to the Parliament building and took over the country. I mean, there was absolutely nothing there. It was Bush and even the indigenous people who claimed to be indigenous South Africans, they weren't there either. They all started migrating in from the north when we found gold and started building the mines and creating job opportunities. The only people that were there were the Khoisan. And they, funny enough, of all the 9 recognized languages of South Africa, the Khoisan language, the actual indigenous people of South Africa, are not represented. Their language is not represented, and they're completely marginalized. So that's the point. I mean, there's no fairness in this takeover whatsoever, but it's the same communist Bravo Sierra that they spew over the television screens over here. It's just, I mean, right now they are actually training citizens, and John read the story last night on his program, how to spot a white supremacist. I mean, this last Saturday, I was in my kitchen and I heard what I thought was fireworks. Boom, 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 boom. And I thought, who's shooting fireworks this time of year? I'm thinking, 4th of July, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, well, never mind. And then I started seeing the helicopters and there was this mall shooting in Allen. I mean, it's just up the road from me. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, this is like South Africa all over again. This is all happening. But the most important part was this Garcia guy that went in there and shot up a bunch of white people. He's now a white supremacist. So,
yeah, I don't mean to laugh. It's just, it's all three of these things. The criminal alien invaders who ran over people, the Venezuelans there, who are also criminal alien invaders. They're not legitimate asylum seekers. They had safe refuge in any of the 6 countries they traveled through to get here. But yeah, they're all being portrayed as white supremacists, but they're all people of color attacking and white people.
Yeah, where do you see a white supremacist shooting up a bunch of white people? Well, I mean, just do the math again, your common core math. But, and that's the point, they are trying so hard to push this white supremacist agenda. Now, it was easy for them to do in South Africa because they were such a minority. We had no voice. I mean, I stood up in 2014, I created a blog called The Truth About South Africa. Man, and here they came. I started doing interviews on international radio programs, and that's actually how I met John. But the point is that, oh my word, I got so many death threats, and then I got a dead bird in my post box. And that was the last straw. I mean, that was okay. Because I know one of my other friends, she got the dead bird, and then in not long after that, she was murdered. So yeah, this is an absolute agenda to get rid of white people. And if you say that, then you're a racist. Well, you know what, Chris? I am so over this racist brand. I mean, my eyes just roll over. You call me a racist, you know, that makes you the racist. And I'm just not even going to entertain you. It's like that word has lost its power. They weaponized the word and now it's lost its power. And I just wish all white people will wake up and realize this. And when you're being called a racist, it's a load of bravosiera, and it's not you, it's them.
Absolutely. They're looking in the mirror and a reflection themselves. I mean, the same people that call people transphobic and homophobic, who's afraid of homosexuals? I'm not afraid of homosexuals. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, phobia is a fear. Who's afraid of homosexuals? Who's afraid of trans people? What people are angry about is people shoving things down throats and then people grooming children. That's what people are upset about.
That's what they're
upset about.
But you know, there's groups now, gays against grooming.
I mean, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I had my hair done about 2 weeks ago, and the lady who did it, she's a good friend of mine, and she said, and we were talking about this gay agenda. She says, "Listen, I'm working in the hairdressing industry. I mean, there's so many queens. Yeah, it's I can't count them on one hand." And when you ask them about what is happening right now in the political arena with the LGBTQ plus RPW, whatever they add to it, they just want nothing to do with it. They say the word, she says, "Oh, darling, we old queens, we don't do that." You know, I mean, it's like they don't participate. But this is all part of an agenda to groom the kids and to create this androgynous society, I think.
I think that's a fair point. I'm going to come back to something related to that, and that's about how I'm encouraged by a bit of pushback. And ironically, of all places, TikTok. It's not exclusively there, but it's on TikTok where so many Black conservatives come on there and just blow apart this nonsense. You know, look, racism has lost its currency. It has no value.
Oh yeah,
calling people it's like the F bomb. You know, I mean, that doesn't shock people anymore. When I was a kid, when you heard that word, woohoo, you know, it has no value. Yeah.
But that is so true. And I mean, right now, and this is what people don't understand, is that Black people in South Africa, those were the poor Black people that everybody was marching for all over the world, you know, just to save them from these evil white supremacists. If I can tell you how the Black people are suffering in South Africa today, they have nothing. They had free healthcare, free school, free everything, and they had jobs. And I'm not saying that there was absolutely no race issues ever. I mean, there's pockets of it everywhere in the world. But what I'm trying to say is in South Africa, there was never this regime that just oppressed the Black people. They all had their own homelands, and this was bought and paid for by South African taxpayers because they were warring tribes. They were like 9 tribes that were the Zulus and Xhosas hate each other. I mean, if they go at each other, it's blood and guts. So what did white man do? You say, whoa, 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 wait a minute. How about you take this land, you take that land, you all teach your children in your own home language, you all have a culture, and we'll teach you how to govern a society. And there's even YouTube videos on YouTube, I don't know if they're still there, where these homeland leaders were talking to President Verwoerd, just absolutely loving him. And that is information that will never be told to the world. And he was shot. I mean, he was assassinated. People don't even know that. Why? But we figured out how to live harmoniously in Africa, and you know, the Khazarian mafia obviously didn't like that, because they came, and the next thing we had this big Jewish community. They're not Jews, they're Khazarians, and infiltrated, got themselves classified white. Okay, I do agree. They should never have classified people. I don't think there's a few things that should have changed, but it wasn't based in racism, you know what I mean? So the fact is, they got themselves classified white, and then turned on the real white population of South Africa, the Christian folk. And that is really what's happened. And if you look at a video that we showed on our show last night, is this Daniel Friedman and his co-producer. I mean, he's the editor of the Citizen newspaper, and his editor, the Rothschild, made this skit, stupid movie about, you know, white genocide and, you know, chopping off a white COCK and making muti, which is, you know, African medicine with the witch doctor's brew with it. And it's just a joke to these people that we are being slaughtered. We have little girls, 3-4 years old, being shot in the head, beaten to death with shovels, 12-year-old boy getting drowned in a hot bath after he watched his mother getting raped and murdered. I mean, and I can go on and on and on. In 2014, I attended 132 funerals. Chris. And these weren't just random. I was on a funeral spree. These were people I knew. These were people I grew up with, family, friends, colleagues. And it's not just the farm. They say farmers because a boer, they call us Bura. And yes. If you translate the word, it says farmer. But it doesn't mean it was just farm attacks. I mean, that 12-year-old boy was drowned in the suburbs of Pretoria. They infiltrate into the suburbs, and at nighttime when everybody's sleeping, here they come. I mean, you were in South Africa. Have you ever seen a community with so many barbed wire, electric fencing?
No, it's my audience is absolutely astounded when I tell them, oh, you know, I was a bit tired when I came back last night from my presentation. I left the keys in the front door and the front door is unlocked. What?
Yeah. I couldn't believe that I could go for a walk with my dog at 10 o'clock at night and not get raped and killed and shot.
Well, not Los Angeles.
Well, no, not Los Angeles. I'm talking Dallas. But I mean, I can still go and take my dog for a walk. I don't know how much longer. I mean, have you seen what they're doing to the southern border?
Getting crazy, absolutely crazy, and it's all over. You know, the Biden regime has turned every small town America into a border town. You know, they you and I can't travel around this country without real ID, either you your passport or me my government issued ID card that's real ID that they can verify biometric data and all that. We can't get on a plane, but criminal alien invaders who violate our sovereignty and cross the Rio Grande in the dark of night, not a migrant, not an immigrant, those people knock on the front door and come through a border post and present identification to enter your country, but not people who invade your country. Those people are processed, mostly adult males of working military age, loaded onto flights paid for by the taxpayer in the dark of night, flown to Tallahassee, to Albany, and to Harrisburg. And I've seen
no documentation. With no documentation.
And we can't get on a plane. We'll be kicked out of an airport, but they load them up and dump them in our neighborhoods. Do you know what they brought to Harrisburg? They brought plane loads of Haitians. Do you know why? Because Harrisburg is one third black. They think we're stupid. We can't see black people are all the same. That's racist. That's bigotry. But that's why they did it. They didn't dump a bunch of Central Americans in Harrisburg. They brought the Haitians here. They took the Central Americans to Florida and they brought the Haitians here because, oh, they're black people. They won't notice them. Yeah, I think we will notice them. I speak six languages. God. I'm not a moron.
Right. And that's the point. But that's the replacement strategy. Is what do they call it? Kuttenhover Cloud? I forget the name now. But it is a replacement strategy. That's what they're doing. I mean, even in South Africa, Cape Province is being managed by the DA, which is the lesser of two evils because they're both communists. But the point is.
And that's exactly right. The lesser of two evils. Yep.
Yeah, but the point is the ANC want to take that over. So what are they doing? They're just busing in these black people from Gauteng and it just comes in there, busloads. So this is not something new. This is what they're replacing the citizens. And the next thing they're going to do is they're going to start killing them. And that's where America has the advantage, because what they did with us, it was a much slower process. I think they were working out the kinks, because now they've worked it out. It's being accelerated over here right now on a spectacular level. But they took their time and they took our guns, and so many people just went to the police station and handed in their guns like good little citizens, you know. And those guns ended up, they were sold to the criminals and used to kill us. I mean, people, don't give up your guns.
Look, I mean, it's Australia. They confiscated firearms in Australia. And what did the government do? They locked people in concentration camps because somebody with a tested positive for that in an office building where someone worked. And they lock them in concentration camps in the Northern Territories. And this is, you know, people like, oh, this is hyperbole. It's not hyperbole. We have eyewitness statements. We have the woman's testimony. We have the fact that she lost her job because she couldn't go to work and they fired her because she didn't show up because she was locked up. And they put them in these little huts. And if you step off your porch, they'll lock you up in prison as a felon. It's just, it's insane. In New Zealand, they took firearms away as well.
They most certainly did. They did that a long time ago. I don't know how that New Zealand is completely communist. But did you see what they did in Los Angeles, in California? They all the cops that left the police force because they were forced to get the vax and they didn't want to get it, they replaced them with illegal aliens. So we now have illegal aliens working as cops in California with no vaccine requirement because they, you know, they don't have the same requirements as we do.
Now,
so
I
how do you explain that?
I didn't know that. I can tell you this, an anecdotal story though. When after 9/11 happened, I was in Tunisia when 9/11 happened. I came back to the States in December of 2020, mm-hmm. or excuse me, of 2001. And of course, everything was very heightened. People were still scared at airports. It had just been a few months. And when I got to DC, there were like, you know, the planes come in from Europe because I was coming back from Europe, even though I was in Africa, I'd mm-hmm. flown on holiday in Europe, then came back. So I came in and like eight planes, you know, with 400 people on it. So that's a lot of people. So we'd go into the line and I spent 4 hours going through immigration. And you know why? Because the customs and border agents at the time for INS, which was at the time, weren't doing background checks on the people they hired. They had to fire 70% of their staff or 60% because they were felons. They were convicted felons working at the airport, checking people's ID coming in at that time. So there were no border agents because they'd all been sacked. It took a while to sort that out. Word. Yeah. So that I can attest to.
You want to hear a nice story?
Go ahead.
After 7 years, 16 vaccines, and I don't know how many biometric tests and appointments and a immigration hearing, I finally got my green card in the post yesterday. Well, 7 years.
Congratulations.
I'm looking at this thing knowing what I went through to get this piece of card. I could have just walked across the bloody border. I mean, really?
Yeah, no, that's
true. It has lost its value.
South Africans are asking me all the time, what should they do? And I'm like, I'm not going to tell you to break the law, but I will tell you that 5 million people have crossed our border without anybody noticing.
Fly to Panama. Fly to Panama, walk across.
So I don't know. That actually, I think, qualifies as an exclusive. Brandy Wells has got a green card. I think I've just broke that story.
Oh, yes, you did. You did. But the point is, Chris, is I am really, really worried because America, if we lose America.
There's no hope for the world.
Where do we go?
There's nowhere for anybody to go. And the thing about America, which is really, I mean, I don't know how people view this, but I look at this as kind of cool. I'm an American, not because I'm of German descent, not because I'm of Viking descent, not because I'm white, not because I'm Christian, not because I'm a man. I'm American by birth, but because of my commitment to this document, the Constitution of the United States. And that's what makes me American. It's an idea. It's an ideal. Yeah. So anybody, you can become an American if you commit to our mores and values and ideals and assimilate, but you can retain your cultural distinctiveness. I wouldn't expect you to change. I mean, you know, if you tried to have a braai, I wouldn't have you arrested for that cultural violation of the norms. That's a barbecue, not a braai. Stop it.
Slight difference, but yes. I totally get you. And that's the point is that everything that I had to learn, now I'm going through to become a citizen and I've got to learn all these. I mean, I've got to go and write a test. But mm-hmm. these guys aren't writing those tests. They're not going to assimilate into the American society the way that it is required or that makes a country or a society work for that matter. It's not going to. This is going to go the route of Africa if something isn't done and done very soon. But Chris, I'm just completely perplexed as to surely there must be some white hat operation that is watching this and have contingencies in place. I cannot for the life of me fathom that America is just gonna fall. It doesn't make sense. There's too many of us for that to happen.
Well, I don't know. I think the backlash is occurring now, and the Bud Light thing is just a small example. But mm-hmm. let me just put this in perspective, some things that we've lost already. First off, we don't have freedom of speech on platforms like this. I can't say the things that I want to say. You know, there was a time when someone had free speech, they'd stand up in Hyde Park and Speaker Square. And if there were nutters, people just walked away. You know, they said crazy stuff. Why can't people just say what they want? I mean, especially if you're not advocating violence against someone, you should be allowed to say what you want. You can't do that on social media. That's already silenced people. When all these people like Tim Pool and Crowder and Bongino, although he was on Fox, but when all these people became famous and Salty Cracker on social media needed them to gain viewers, to get sponsorship, to get advertising. And then once they were big enough, they had the revenue flow, then they could silence speech. That's unfortunately when I was able, finally, no longer an intelligence officer, to enter the realm. And the one moment I walk in and just tell the truth, I start getting censored. And that's really limited my ability. But so I have those guys. But so you don't have social media. The media lies each and every day. I mean, you're running around saying that Donald Trump's Title 42, it's not Donald Trump's. It was passed in 1944. It's simply
yeah, it was a World
clause.
War II
yes,
era.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's simply a clause in there to respond to public health emergency, and it's ending. No, by the way, Joe said the thing ended last year. So why do we have to wait till now? So we don't have that. We don't have free speech. And here's the worst part. The worst part. The government refuses to enforce the law. It is a felony to demonstrate outside the home of a federal judge or magistrate. Yet Supreme Court justices were intimidated by people showing up on the lawn. It's also a crime to do that to a sitting member of Congress. Josh Hawley from Missouri, his wife was 9 months pregnant. They came beating on her door. The cops sitting in the street doing nothing about it. Those are all felons, not a single arrest. We had an actual insurrection in Seattle, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. They declared their own country. And what did they do? They segregated. Only Black people can go here. And nobody's arrested for an insurrection, a genuine insurrection. And here's even worse. What we known, what we suspected, we now have the prima facie evidence of it because of Elon Musk. I'm not a huge fan of Elon. I don't have anything against him. He's a brilliant entrepreneur, but I don't think he's a free speech guy that he claims. But anyway, but Elon Musk releasing the Twitter information, and you agree, that's great. Elon Musk releasing the Twitter information proves without a shadow of a doubt, the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Incompetence, which is what I call them, they have colluded with Twitter and who knows what other platforms to silence speech that they don't approve. That is a direct violation of the First Amendment. I spent 36 and a half years of my life defending that Constitution against these claims. This government's out of control. And it's not just now. It was the bureaucracy when Trump was in office, too, because all this happened on his watch, too, because people weren't paying attention. You know, America isn't gone, but we are not far from being gone. This is scary, Brandy.
It is. It is truly scary. And the only thing that's going to save us is God. We need to all drop to our knees and start praying feverishly that God will intervene. I believe he would, because what is the alternative? Armageddon?
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, crazy, crazy. Oh, speaking of which, Elon Musk, someone just put out in the chat here, you know, about not trusting Elon. He just hired an NBC Universal advertising executive who also worked at Turner Broadcasting and CNN. Linda Yaccarino is coming in now. So good luck with that free speech platform. We'll see what happens on Twitter. I wouldn't hold my breath.
Didn't he give Don Lemon a show too? He gave Tucker a show and then he gave Don Lemon because Don Lemon got fired off CNN too. Well, Don Lemon's show won't get the hits that Tucker's get. But I mean, if I look at John B's Twitter page, he is being so censored on that. It is crazy. When Elon implemented the ad, the new Twitter ad, so you can boost your posts. So what we did is we allocate marketing budget and we started boosting our show notifications and it worked twice. Now we are ineligible to advertise. It was just a show notice, a show banner. And we say we're going to speak to Colonel Chris Wyatt tonight. I mean, it's nothing. It wasn't even fake news. You know, it was a show notice. And we are ineligible to advertise our shows on Twitter. So I don't believe that Elon is a free speech guy. Also, he's been funded by Soros. I mean, who do you think funded his whole SpaceX thing? It didn't come out of his back pocket. He got so many government grants because they know and they're going to be using it. Similar to Amazon, Jeff Bezos, it's a corporate capitalism. Crony capitalism. It's
crony capitalism.
It that's exactly what it is. And there's a reason why he is where he is today. Yes, he's getting some attacks, but I believe he's part of the what do they call it?
The cabal.
The controlled opposition.
John's still there. I heard John in the background.
Hey, you want me to call him? He finishes the interview.
No. This is with you. I'll interview him another time if he's up for it. But hey, listen, let's get personal here, if you don't mind, and because my audience, not all of them know Brandy Wells. I don't know who you are. I mean, some of people I said I'm getting Brandy. Oh, I know her. She was a shark girl, man. Anyway, but so let's.
Oh, years ago. This was probably 100 years.
Was it 100 years ago? Come on. No, but look, like okay. It. So I think what some of the audience knows is that you're from South Africa. You live in the States now and you work in broadcasting and you were a shark girl, but you're an East Coast girl, aren't you? From down in KZN?
Yeah, I lived my entire adult life in Durban, South Africa. I lived in Umhlanga, and then later on I moved to Hillcrest, which is all in that highway KZN eThekwini area. But I grew up on a farm in the middle of nowhere between Standerton and Vrede. And I went to the University of Pretoria. So ek is 'n boeremeisie deur en
Tux,
deur.
Tux.
Yeah, Tukkies meisie. And then after, because I studied marketing, I've finished. I got my first job in Durban, South Africa, and I was working for a company called Academy of Learning. And I was one of the training advisors. That was my very, very first job after varsity. So that's where my little career started in South Africa. And I moved up and eventually worked for TBWA, Hunter Scarris, Hurt & Carter, biggest advertising, marketing, production company in the Southern Hemisphere. So I got to work on a lot of, because my degree was BCom marketing. So I really was into marketing. And then I landed the World Cup account with TBWA, Hunter Scarris, when the World Cup came to South Africa in 2010. I became the project manager of that account for FIFA. It was a huge thing. It was
Wow.
like a career move. And I've never seen budgets so big. But yes, I was in
I
control of
have.
all
I
the
was in the government.
marketing, PR. I mean, did the stadium openings, the new airports, King Shaka Airport in Durban, the all the new stadiums that they were building, all had to do all the PR for that, and then the city branding, getting printed all the things. I mean, it was huge. It was the biggest job. It was 2 years contract. It was a 2 year contract, but oh my word, I don't think I slept much in that 2 years. But it was a life changing event. And from there, I just started my own business and started consulting, marketing, and it just grew. And then ultimately landing this big job in America for a call center international based in the UK, with offices in Umhlanga, CCI, and I came to America to talk to AT&T, not knowing that John B. Wells lives in Dallas, and I had just done an interview with him a year before, after I went to a Steve Hoffmeyer concert, and I just saw all those names coming up on the screen, and he's doing his speech about all the farm murders. And you know, every time somebody dies, a Hartzog cookie recipe goes and a song goes. I mean, I was bawling my eyes out. And that very next day, I started my blog. Point is that because I was on John's show and I was posting on Facebook, look, I'm at the state fair, I'm eating a corn dog, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. His
Ew, corn dog.
was,
Ew.
I've never had
Ew.
a corn dog before.
Oh,
Okay,
God.
you know,
And
and
never
so.
again.
Oh, it's not too bad. But then his followers who followed my Facebook page after I was a guest on his show contacted John and said, hey, Brandy's in Dallas. So the next thing I get a phone call, hello, this is John B. Wells. I'm like, really? I thought it was kind of cover. I'm like, really? Yeah, the rest is history.
You're being punked by Ashton Kutcher. That's what you thought,
Right?
right?
I just thought it was one of those, yeah.
Now, Brandy, ek praat nie Afrikaans nie, maar I can't pronounce the city correctly, and I have to correct you. For my audience, they know that it is not pronounced Durban. It's pronounced Dirtbin, just so you know,
Dirt
okay?
pen. Oh,
Yes.
it's an oh, that's one of those name checks. Oh, talk about Durban. I remember when I came, when I got my first, I had to go for my first appointment at the city. Her name was Julie Ellingson. She was my customer, my client from the city, when I was at TBWA running a World Cup account. And so it was my very, very first day at on that job, and I said, okay, so I've got an appointment, and they said, you have to go see her. I said, what's the address? And they said, 70 Masabalala Yengwa Avenue. And I'm like, what?
What?
Is that in South Africa? Oh yeah, it used to be NMR. I said, why did you just say so? But that's what they did. They changed all the street names that I didn't know where I was. I couldn't, you know, you look at and then you know that it used to be West Street and now it's some name you
No,
can't
look,
even
I'm
pronounce.
with you. I was in Pretoria. I was in Hatfield, and I was asking for an address, and someone said Sarah Bartman. I'm like, Schoeman? Oh yeah, Schumann. Okay, that's where it's at. I know where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, they just changed it, but they're going to do it here now as well. They're just going to start changing names. Look at it. You're going to see libraries, and it's all going to be.
Well, we've already seen it. It has started with U.S. military installations. Yeah, they're renaming all the installations. Yep.
And it'll be these communist names: Barack Obama Library and Stalin Road. I mean, it'll be. You know, I know the one road that went past my house was Brand Road in Morningside, and they turned that to Che Guevara Road.
Che Guevara. Talk about an opportunist and a troublemaker. That guy is, what a piece of work he was. Sticking his nose in other people's business. But he eventually paid the price for it. They took him out. Yeah. Well, I just want to get into that a little bit so people know a little bit more about you and understand a little bit about you, which is the 2010 FIFA World Cup. I actually went to games. I was living in Botswana at the time. I went to Loftus to watch Cameroon play Denmark. And I enjoyed the experience at Loftus. It was sold out. The only problem I had was that these idiots with their vuvuzelas behind me blowing the entire game, and I was under the concrete, so it just reverberated. And the spittle coming out of it, because it's disgusting.
Oh, that must have been horrible, you poor man.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what happened, just to give you context, is I started a blog in 2014. It was kind of a combination. When my son came home with a school project, a history project, and it's like, tomorrow I have to hand it in, and it's like 9 o'clock now, and I forgot. So I ended up helping him with his history lesson, and I realized that the history they're teaching the kids is a load of nonsense. That's why I started The Truth About South Africa. I just wrote down the real history. And then I went to Steve Hofmeyr's concert, and I started the Facebook page, The Truth About South Africa. And it sort of kind of came together, and John's producer found that, because John wanted to talk about South Africa, having been there, being the Lexington man. And yeah, that's how that all happened. And now I live in America, but I am still the South African activist. I mean, what I do behind the scenes, talking to people, trying to figure out how to help our people, and in the same time, realizing America is in the same trouble, and trying to show people the connections. And hopefully, if people understand that it is a worldwide agenda, South Africa was just the blueprint of what they're implementing here now. And if all of us, patriot Christian people, can stand up and rise up together, then, maybe then, we can make a change.
And it's a lot of things that people don't even really realize are part of this whole agenda, such as student loan forgiveness. How is that morally acceptable? I paid my student loan back. Why should I finance the student loan for some lazy shift about who got a gender studies degree, and or even if they got a physicist degree and they bought iPhones and went to spring break with the loans that they borrowed, and now I have to finance that? I scrimped and saved. I didn't buy furniture until for 10, 12 years I've been living in houses. I didn't buy this. I bought my car with cash. I saved for 4 years to buy a car. Why should I be penalized for that? But that's part of it too, because
it's like reparations. What is California doing? Reparations for all the black people because of slavery. But California never had slavery.
Well, it was never a slave state. And not only that, I mean, it's ridiculous. The majority of white Americans in this country today, their ancestors came after the 13th Amendment was enacted in 1865, December 6th, which is when they want to celebrate the Juneteenth. It ought to be December 6th. That's when slavery actually ended, when the 13th Amendment was ratified. But most white Americans, now I'm an OG, I'm original gangster. My ancestors, Sir Francis Wyatt, was the first royal governor of the Jamestown Colony, Virginia, in 1621. And we've been here since 1621. So, you know, you can blame us for it. But the point is that most white Americans came afterwards. And you know, we have 3 million black Africans who've migrated to America since 1990. They have nothing to do with this. Where are they going to? And what about black folks in America? Most black Americans, African Americans, as Jesse Jackson made up that fake description, most African Americans are mostly European DNA. So do they get a partial settlement? Just silly.
Well, that's the point. It's irrelevant. I mean, look at me. I was born in Africa. I'm an African American. John always joke. He says we're an African American couple. You should see the looks we get. But you know, the other day I took an Uber. John, I had to meet John somewhere, and somewhere I didn't have a car. I said, "Don't worry, I'll just take an Uber." And my Uber driver, His name is, it said, Sipho is picking me up. Now, I know Sipho is a Zulu name from Durban. So I stood in the car, I said, Sipho, where are you from? And he looked at me, he said, you're South Africa. I said, yeah, you heard my accent. And he said to me, I said, where are you from? He says, I'm from South Africa, I'm from Durban. I said, where am I? So bona unjani. You know, this man almost, he pulled over. He pulled over to the side of the road and he came out and he hugged me. He said, my sister. And that's what people don't understand. The concept that they have of what South Africa is and the melting pot of people that just get, they just got along. But the American communist agenda, not American, but the same what we see in America being implemented now. But this all came from, you know, London City, if you ask me, because they're
There's definitely some folks that we could name, but we'll stay away from that for the moment. But you're fine. No, I just didn't want to get into that at the moment. But if you look at surveys of what Americans believe, American adults, American citizens, not visitors, but American adults, surveys over the past three decades since the 1990s, what they considered to be the top political issues of concern for the nation. And you'll find that racism had dropped to single digits for all ethnic groups, including Black Americans, single digits, until 2009, Barack Hussein Obama. And now two-thirds of Americans think that race is a major political concern. You know, when I was teaching at the War College, I would go down to the, when I first arrived, it was May. I came back from Ethiopia. I had stopped in Germany, then I came back to the States. So the classes, the new year starts in September. So, I mean, I'm just doing administrative stuff, work, getting my syllabus ready, that sort of thing. And I would go downstairs to the cafeteria and eat lunch. And I'd see all these young interns who were working for academic or civilian professors and such. And they're all from Ivy League schools, all from all over. And they all want to come here to get on their CV that they were an intern at the War College. That's fine. But this was Freddie Gray and Trayvon Martin and Hands Up and all that other nonsense that was going on, all lied about for the most part. And so they're all talking. And I would listen to their conversations. I'd go down there throughout the summer and I'd say, excuse me, can I interrupt you guys for a second? Let me ask you a question. What do you think the percentage of America's population is that's Black? And I would get 45%, 38%, 27%. 13. Yeah, 13%. Now it's dropped. It was 13.5% last time. Now it's 13 because of the massive influx of immigrants coming here, diluting the Black population as well. And so they're like, huh? And so now let me jump forward today. Someone explained to me that when I live in a region that's 94, 96% white, that 87% of the actors on every single commercial are Black or mixed race or an interracial couple that you don't see. Or they're gay. You know, it's just crazy. But
that happened in South Africa too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's all, and you know, the fees must fall. All that stuff's come here. Now we've got fees must fall in the same format, except it's loan forgiveness. It's the same sort of thing. Idiocy. But hey, I want to go back for a second here and share some with you. You mentioned Steve Hofmeyer. I don't know if you know this, but I was at Steve's concert in Velvedacht in February. I don't know if you knew that, but did you know I was there?
Velvedacht. I did not know you were there, but thanks. Okay, He's a great guy. I am trying to get him on John's show, and I'm just not getting. I don't know. Maybe I'm just sending the wrong message.
No. You're not. Steve's a friend. I know him well, and he was a guest on my program 3 years ago. And whenever I'm in South Africa, we do a braai. I just did another braai with him when I was there in February. Mm-hmm. And I've been to his house. He's been to my friend's house over there. But Steve is really, he's eased off that for the moment for a number of reasons. But it's nothing to do with John. It's not that at all. He just isn't doing those things. But so what I want to say you know what's going on here. So at the concert, I was walking around and they had the wine tasting room was roped off. This is on Skalkberger's Wine Estate there in Wellington. And so this guy comes out of the building because I was setting my camera up. I went down the stage. I'm walking back and the opening acts were playing. And this guy says, excuse me, are you Mr. Chris? I'm like, yeah, I guess. Call me inside. I walk inside. There's Steve. And so, you know, when Steve and I get chatting, it could just go forever. And so I could see the promoters kind of stand there. He wasn't getting angry, but I knew that. I said, listen, when does Steve go on? How much time do you have? He's got 20 minutes. I said, okay, well, I'll make sure we don't go for more than 18. Anyway, so we start chatting. And Steve says, He's like, John, he's got that deep voice. I'm going to sing a song for you. And I said, oh, cool. Are you going to sing Dilant? Because I love that song. He said, no, I'm not going to sing Dilant. And then what else did I ask him? I asked him another song. He said, no, I'm not going to sing that song. I said, what are you going to sing? He says, I'm going to sing the Ballad of the Green Beret for you. I'm like, that's kind of cool. I was an Army colonel. Yeah, that's kind of cool. He's going to dedicate it to me. So when he got to that point in a concert, now what I hate at concerts and sporting events is when photographers or video people block your view when you pay for a good seat, right? You're in the front row and they get in your way and you can't see. So I try to avoid that. So I set my camera up on the side of the stage so it wouldn't block a view. But then he started speaking. He's getting ready to play the Ballad for Green Beret. And he started speaking Afrikaans. And he's like, oh, we got a big friend here tonight, a big friend of Afrikaners in South Africa. He speaks Afrikaans. Bit of a stretch on that one, but I understand it. But anyway, so he speaks Afrikaans and he's an American. And I realize he's talking about me. So I start playing the video and I move the camera around. I put it out of view in front of the stage. I duck down and then I go around and I'm just listening on the side of the stage. He sings the first verse. He goes, I need you up on stage. Need to see what a real soldier looks like. Calls me up on stage. He gets up there and he gives me a big hug, draws me in. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Wyatt, big round of applause from everybody. And he says, you know the words? I'm like, yeah, but I can't sing. And then he pulls me in danger close, Rona close up to his face. I mean, little too close for my personal space. And he had me sing the Ballad of the Green Beret with him. It was really cool. It was really awesome.
Oh, wow. Wow. That must have been such an experience. Yeah, I have the world of respect for him. I mean, but we also know that if you are a person in doing what we do, speaking up against this tyrannical Marxism craziness, then you have a target on your back. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine all the things that I've heard about myself. You know, so now when I read things, I mean, people are Steve this or this guy or Chris Wyatt that, I don't even see it because I know it's just Bravo Sierra.
No, it's just nonsense. I mean, look, there are real bigots and real racists out there. There's no need to go hunting for them. They'll make themselves known. But the reason they tar and feather and target people who speak the truth is because the truth is dangerous. I have a slide that I used to put up on my stream and I put up occasionally. I said, truth is the counter revolution because it is. The truth is counter because they make up anything like Joe Biden. I've reduced the deficit by 1.9. What are you smoking? The 2024 budget proposal is $6.9 trillion, of which $1.9 trillion is debt. How is that reducing these people? And of course, they take partial truths and contort it, and the sheep just believe it. The sheep will believe anything.
Just go get another booster, you know. Exactly. But that's the point. And we are under attack. And you're right. Truth is the counter revolution. Even the Bible says you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, That's what I go by. I know I read the end of the book there, and I know in the end we win.
But it's on so many fronts, Brendy. I mean, are you and John ever discouraged? I mean, I think you're probably discouraged a bit. It's on every front. So language, you know, I speak six languages. I love to have these conversations because when they come after me, I just tear them apart. I used to work at the Defense Intelligence Agency, and I'd go down at lunchtime, and they'd be talking about something about, you know, English being the official language because it was after 9/11. And I jump in with these civilians down there after I come back from running and get something to drink to rehydrate. And I'm sitting there chatting with them at lunchtime. That was my lunch, rehydrating. Anyway, so they would be like, yeah, no, English is, they want to make it the official language. I said, it should be the official language. Oh, you're just a typical American. You're too lazy to learn a foreign language. At the time, I spoke four languages. Now I speak six. I said, well, I speak four languages. Oh, well, they're probably just romance languages. No, I speak African languages. And they can't. They don't know what to say. They know what to say. Yeah. It's like when they throw the race card at me. Really, racist. Do you know where I grew up in a housing project that was all black except for three white families, 300 families? That I lived in upstate New York in Buffalo, where all my classmates were Puerto Rican and spoke Spanish and didn't speak to me. Do you know that I spent a third of my life in Africa? Do you know that I wrote a presidential daily brief that saved 640,000 black Southern Africans from starving to death? Yeah, I think they canceled my race card a long time ago.
Yeah, and that is exactly the thing. If you are, I mean, that's what I said it on John's show. I speak Zulu, Xhosa, Khulu, Manawe. You don't speak the language of people that you supposedly hate.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Because if you speak to a Zulu and you speak his language to him, they respect you. Why? Because they know you've spent time with their people, enough time to learn their language. So yeah, it's all, I mean, yeah, I'm not talking about the hordes of brainwashed Julius Malema followers that is just rabid and coming, to kill us. That is a political agenda on its own. Those people have been brainwashed to a point of no return. But you see the same white guys working for BLM here. It's not a skin thing. It's a head thing. It's a, they are brain they little soldiers for the enemy. That's all they are. They're useful idiots.
Yeah,
Really?
that's right. They're oxygen thieves, useful idiots. Listen, Brittany, Brett Sessoms gave two super chats, so I'm negligent in not asking his question. Let me ask. He's got a couple questions for you if we could get to that.
Sure.
So Brett, who lives down in Mississippi, interesting fellow, says, "What are Brittany's thoughts on Action SA and their impact on South Africa? You want to feel that one?"
My thoughts on what?
Herman Mashaba's Action SA.
Herman Mashaba accent, I don't know
Oh, you
anything
couldn't
about.
no, Herman Mashaba, the guy that used to be in the Democratic Alliance.
Herman Mashaba. Sorry,
Yeah.
I
It
didn't hear you.
broke up. Yeah. So any thoughts on Action SA, his political party?
There is no political solution for South Africa. I mean, you can, that's what they've been doing. They keep creating these new political parties. I was part of the INCOPIA. When they started way back then, they said, "Oh, we're starting this new party." And when you understand what you have to go through to get your name on the ballot, and when you go and vote in South Africa, it's not like a Republican Democrat ticket. You open that page, and I mean, there's like 150 names on there. There's even one with a political party called KISS, and there's just a bunch of lips, So it's irrelevant whether he starts a party or not, and there's a few people that started it. I don't particularly agree with his agenda all the way, but another political party in South Africa is not a solution. It's not going to get traction. They're not going to get to raise the money to even participate in the election, and if they do, it's just going to get stolen from them. That's why when they stole the election in America, I said the conservatives, unless God steps in himself, the conservatives will never win another election. It sounds terrible, but that is what happened in South Africa. You can go vote until you're blue in the face. It is a captured environment that makes no difference whatsoever. So even now, do you think they've changed any of the laws that allow them to steal the election in 2020?
We got to be careful
No.
there. We're going censorship platform.
No, I'm with you, but I'm just saying, starting a new political party,
No, that's not a
it's nice.
solution. That's the last thing South Africa needs is a new political party, I think is your point. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's not accomplished. Now, Brett had another question. He said, do you have any thoughts, since you're from KZN, it makes sense. Any thoughts on how folks glorify Shaka Zulu?
Well, Shaka Zulu was a king years and years ago. His mom was Nandi. They've changed one of the roads to Nandi Drive now as well. But yeah, he was a brutal king, man. He was brutal to the point that any time he made one of his wives or girlfriends pregnant, he'd kill her. Did you know that?
Yeah, no, I know,
Because
because he didn't want the heirs, the
yeah,
competing, yeah. Because they'd kill
so
him.
Shaka, yeah. And I mean, he was brutal. He was a brutal, brutal leader. He impaled so many of his own people. No, he was a brutal leader. But in the Zulu culture, that used to be a king, and they admire him. I don't particularly think he was a great historical figure, but he played a huge role in the Zulu nation, and that's their king.
Yeah, no, and that's who they've, a much more sympathetic figure in my view would be Cetshwayo, but that's my view. If you want a
Yes.
Zulu king, he was much more a better king, I would say, despite
Yeah.
the Brits going after him. So I want to welcome Bob's Swart, who's become a member of the channel. I don't know if that was
Hello,
did you get that
Bob.
on your, hey Bob, it looks like Bob got that on his own. And then Matthew Dixon, our resident troll, used his free super chat for his 1 month membership to ask if Brendy could come to the southern border and pick him up.
I'll have to ask my husband. I doubt he'll say yes.
Was gonna say, you're not gonna throw John on that one. So, oh my goodness, yeah, people have a lot of fun. Hey, listen,
Yeah.
here's one. Let's shift a little bit. Are you, have you still got you for a bit? Are we okay to go on?
Yeah, how long?
Well, about another 20 minutes. Is that too much?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
I got to go pick up my steamed crabs after that. So they had a special today. So
your what?
Steamed crabs. I'm from Maryland originally.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Chesapeake Bay. Oh, yeah. You wouldn't know about that. No. Steamed crabs, man.
Have you had a Mopani worm yet?
I don't touch Mopani worm, but I drink marula. That's rarely, but I like marula. But I never had a Mopani worm. Yeah. No. That's
neither
not
have
that's,
I.
That's not my. By the way, Bob Swartz, I owe you this, and I apologize because I wasn't on the screen at the time. Whenever somebody becomes a paying member of the channel to support independent journalism, I, as a retired colonel, offer you a hand salute. It's a sign of respect. And so usually I do it when it's up on the screen. I missed that, Bob. So my apologies, but this salute is for you. Thank you very much for becoming a member. Anyway, that's last night at the Veterans for Foreign Wars post, where I've just been elected and just installed yesterday as the commander for our local VFW post, after being suckered into doing it. But I was talking to one of the guys at the club outside, and apparently he watches my program, and he's like, I'm going to salute you. You can't salute me. I said, why? Because he's an enlisted guy. And I said, why? He said, no, you're always saluting people in your program. I said, yeah, it's a sign of respect. I'm thanking them. You know, it's a commitment, especially in this age of Biden inflation. Anything anybody gives up is sometimes difficult. So thank you for that. But yeah, so Brendy, let's talk a little bit about something that's broken the news this week. Interest of full disclosure, I worked at the U.S. Embassy to the African Union, and I was the senior military advisor there. My boss was Ruben Brigady, who is a very ambitious, politically left guy, but he's a good American, but he's just politically left. And after he was ambassador there, he went back into academia. He'd been at George Mason before. Then he went, I think, to American University. Anyway, he was appointed as the ambassador to South Africa. Now, this is a hell of an improvement over Lana Marks, I would say. So I'll give you that. But anyway, he is the ambassador there, and he had a press conference yesterday or the day before. And he came out and said that the American government has evidence that the South African government had loaded up the Lady R, that ship that was on the sanction list from Russia, and gave them munitions and weapons. Now, before you respond, let me just make this clear. I don't care if South Africa sells weapons to Russia or if China does, because my president is fueling a proxy war in Ukraine, and so is NATO. So there's all kinds of actors here. But my issue with this is that South Africa asserts that it's neutral and that it takes a neutral stance, when actually it has a pro-Russia stance. And some people support that, some people disagree with. My problem with it is their dishonesty. But have you seen this story, and have you been following it?
Well, it's not really dishonesty, Chris. I mean, South Africa is part of BRICS. I mean, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. They are part of the BRICS bloc. So
South Africa is the rounding error with the apostrophe at the end. That's correct, of that acronym.
Exactly.
You are correct.
So, of course, the BRICS countries will support the BRICS nations. So I made a big deal about it way back then, when I realized that we are part of the Russia, China, communist bloc of the world. But after living here for a while and understanding what Putin is going through, you know, you can shoot me, but I stand with Russia on this one. I'm not saying Putin, you know, is my hero or anything, but you just have to have two brain cells and rub it together and get a small spark to really understand who is fighting this war. And NATO and the Western Kazarians, they are fighting. I mean, they took over Ukraine in 2014.
Yeah, so, well, they occupied Crimea and annexed it, and the Donbass.
It's always been part of Russia. And when they started saying that that Ukraine is going to join NATO, that was Putin's red line. And rightfully so. Who wants a nuclear weapon pointed at Moscow if you're the president? I mean, no. So I get it. And my opinion is that if South Africa is sending weapons to Russia, then you know, maybe I've just found one thing to be proud of today, of my home country.
Well, maybe you found something to be in concert with, the African National Congress.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't happen often, but I will say it if it's true.
Yeah, no, listen, that's why I was clear and I put the disclaimer out. I don't have a dog in the fight about who's supplying weapons to either side, because it's being done on both sides. My issue was with you know, the ANC lying to the world, lying to the public, you know, saying we're not doing this when they're clearly doing it. But that's the issue I took
with it. Lie. Show me a politician who doesn't lie and I'll show you, you know.
It's probably why I haven't, I keep getting asked to run for office and I keep prevaricating, you know, about whether I'm going to do it or not, because I don't want to be known as a liar because my word is my bond. So no, there's a few good politicians out there. There just aren't a lot. You know, when I talk about Congress, and people ask me about it, especially for my international audience, I said, listen, you have to understand that the House and the Senate are comprised primarily of ambulance chasing shyster lawyers and, you know, used car salesmen who just have a slightly better gift of gab and are slightly better looking with makeup on than the other person that ran. There are only a handful of true patriots. I would say in the House of Representatives, the number is probably 3 or 4 dozen max. And the Senate, there might be 25 or 30 senators that have the interest of America and Americans first and in our foreign policy. The rest of these people, it's, you know, the AOCs, the Ayanna Pressleys, the Ilhan Omar. No, that's an ambassador. I'm talking about in Congress. And then you've got, you know, Mitch McConnell's and Paul Ryan's. These people are in it for their fame and for their minutes on MSNBC and Fox News and for the money they get and the life they get. I mean, you know, you serve there for a couple terms as a congressman, you got a retirement the rest of your life, you get free medical care. I spent 36 and a half years in the Army. I had to spend $1,100 yesterday for a root canal. I was supposed to get free medical care. I've fought in combat multiple times. I spent 23 of my 36 years overseas. And these little toadies get elected because they're used car salesmen. And then they just go on these talk shows and they do nothing for this country except bury us in debt. It's pretty scary stuff.
Yeah, we need to really and totally take over every county, county by county. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Paul Preston, but maybe we should look into what he's doing, because he's getting the sheriffs to resign based on a couple of signatures he's getting that demands a investigation. I'll get you more information on that, but that might be a strategy. But if you are running for Congress, man, I'll be your campaign director.
Well, with your background in marketing, I might be able to use that. That might be helpful.
I'll support you all the way, because ultimately, Chris, it's about not just about America or South Africa. It's about the preservation of the Christian nation, the Christian people, because that's who's under attack. If you take it, if you want to really peel down the onion to the core of the problem, and that is Christianity is under attack, and they don't care. I mean, if you look at who's it, Larry Elder, he's now called a white supremacist. I mean, he's a black guy.
The black face of white supremacy, yeah.
Yeah, he's the black face of white supremacy. These guys are so rabid now. They don't, I mean, it's not even about your skin color anymore. No. You're a white supremacist. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, or yellow. It's your ideology. And what is your ideology? It's your Christianity. If you're a Christian patriot that believes in love, liberty, and freedom, and God, well, then you're the enemy. And that's the problem.
Well, let me ask you this question, because there's the South African context. Of course, the National Party was still in power till 1994. And they were very much in concert with the Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa. And that's why Sun City existed up there in Maputo-Tswana, you know, where people could go and let their hair down because you couldn't do it elsewhere. It was very Calvinist and strict. But I noticed this in America in the 1980s as a young man, when I graduated high school in the early 80s and then went in the Army, the denigration and attack on Christians. Now, I'm a Christian, but I'm not a person that attends church on a regular basis. You know, for me, that's a place where people can celebrate together, but your connection is a personal one with your deity. It doesn't have to be celebrated in church. So that's just my personal philosophy. But I noticed it in the 1980s already, but they go after, because and then we had plenty of easy targets like Tammy Faye and Jim Baker that made it very easy to go after them.
Yeah.
But they started speaking about Christians and Christianity in a horrible way and demonizing and attacking all the beliefs and misquoting the Bible and misquoting the history and lying about the Crusades and this, that, and the other. It all started for me, I saw it clearly in the 1980s, and it's reached the point now where a larger and larger percentage of Americans are agnostic or atheist, outright atheist. They're not growing up and steeped in the faith that their families have done in the past. But if you speak about Christianity in a positive light, you get attacked. But if you don't speak about Islam in a positive light, you get attacked. If you say nothing about Judaism, no problem. But when something happens to a Jew, and if you aren't demonizing the people that did it, then there's a problem. So you see, it's not equal treatment of faiths here. And this country, you don't have to be a Christian, Jew, or Muslim to be an American, but you can be any one of those things, be an American.
Yeah, That is completely true. I mean, John said you can go to Germany and become a German citizen, but you'll never
But you're
be
not
German.
German. That's right. You're a
Yeah.
German national. You're
Yeah.
not, you
And
go to the UK, you are not English if you're Pakistani and you move to the UK and become a citizen. You're a Brit. That's, you can be a Brit, but you're not English, you're not Welsh, you're not Scots. Now, if you're from Africa and you marry a Scot and you have a kid, that kid can be a Scot because they've got
yeah.
Scottish heritage. Yeah.
Yeah, so but anybody can come to America and become an American. And that's the point. I think it's the lowest common denominator. If people just start to this is what they did with the education, the churches and everything. They just dumbed down the whole society and trying to make cookie cutter humans. And you can't because God created us all individual, uniquely and with a specific gift. We all can't be, you know, brain surgeons. Who's going to fix the hole in the road? You know, so we all have to play a part. But what these people are trying to do is to create little drones. And in my opinion, is just resurrect the Tower of Babel so that they can all, you know, congregate in one language, one thought, and one mind and open this portal to frickin' hell or somewhere. Because ultimately, it's a battle between the seeds, her seed, his seed, battle between good and evil. And the Bible says this battle is not flesh and blood, but it is in the heavenly realm. So, yes. If you want to take it down all the way down to the bone, this is the devil and God stuff, you know, and I think we are watching the end of the age play out.
Well, you know, yeah, end of ages, maybe that's where we're at, but there's certainly something
Yeah.
very strange going on globally. It's not just in South Africa, it's not just in America, it's all over. What's so makes me so heart sore is spending a big chunk of my life supporting the defending Constitution, but also a fair portion of it defeating communism. And to see people talk about it, and then the denigration of capitalism. We don't have capitalism in America. We have crony, pseudo-capitalism. If we had capitalism, there'd be no Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac propping up and interfering in the property market. You know, when the 2008 financial crisis happened, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac owned two-thirds of the mortgages on people's homes in this country. They're only supposed to be for people who can't get loans, who have poor credit, or disabled, or historically disadvantaged. Only 15% of the population qualify for loans, but they held the paper for two-thirds of our loans. No wonder we got in a bind. Those organizations have to answer to shareholders and they have to answer to Congress. You can't do both. You can't get high returns and give homes to people that aren't creditworthy. And there you go. It's not capitalism. I mean, quotas and all this nonsense, you know, advantages in government for contracts based on your status as a veteran or as a woman or as a minority. That's not capitalism. That's the market is rigged. That's the bottom line here. And it's very, very sad to see. And of course, South Africa, the market's very rigged.
Oh, it's completely rigged. But you know, Chris, I recently got into this whole thing about being a national, being a citizen, being all of that. I mean, there's a lot of programs on the internet that explains that at the moment. Specifically, the guy I'm following is Roger Sales, and explaining the how Americans became from a free citizen sort of into the feudal system and now being under the being a citizen and then you take it down to the birth bonds and they're actually trading money on your life. So how free are we? How enslaved are we? And that is what that's my rabbit hole at the moment. I'm trying to figure out, okay, I know we're enslaved. I know that the Constitution to these guys mean absolutely nothing. What is the basis that justifies them in pulling this off without consequences? Does that make sense? So
Yeah, it does.
if you look at it and you strip it down to the bone as a USA citizen, which and I understand this now because I'm trying to achieve that. You are in an agreement which actually takes your rights as a your natural God-given rights away, and you know you don't even fall under the Constitution anymore because the Constitution is land is free is your freedom, your God-given freedom, your God
You're
citizenship, you know.
inalienable, you're inalienable or unalienable
Yes.
rights. Your
Yes.
natural rights under God.
Your natural rights.
Yeah,
So
that's the word you're looking for, your natural rights. Yep.
Yes, that's the word. So the fact is, I think to a large extent, this whole way that they are controlling us with your identity, and they're ultimately going to give you an identity chip or something, that I think we need to look at that and figure out what on earth did they do there. I'm not an
It's not a
expert on this.
conspiracy, no, but it's not a conspiracy either. I mean, who's the proponent for subdermal chips? Who's pushing that? Elon
Yeah,
Musk.
right.
Elon Musk.
And the brain link and the link, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, do me a favor. And this is if you, and once again, and I know I sound like a crazy Christian, I'm not. I just read everything that I find. And if you go to the Bible, you look at Daniel's statue and you get down to the 10 toes and you see that the New World Order is trying to divide the world into 10 regions, no longer country, 10 regions, the 10 toes. And what does it say? It's the clay and the iron that doesn't mix. Clay is the humans. And what are they injecting to us now?
No, I got you. I know where you're going. I know where you're going with
You
that.
see what I'm
No,
saying?
I see what you're saying. Well, we're going to wrap up here shortly. But before we do, let me just broach another topic with you and get your thoughts on this. So, Alex Newman came up here recently. I appear on his program, The Sentinel Report, periodically and discuss South Africa and other and U.S. politics. Alex is one of these people who's been exposing what's been happening in our education system, and it's truly atrocious what's going on. And for people that don't have kids in school right now or don't pay close attention to what their kids are doing in school, you will be astounded. It's not just drag queen story hour. It's the fact that they're being dumbed down to such a level that they're not even functionally literate. I mean, the graduation rates in Baltimore and DC, when this is 20 years ago, I don't know what they are now, but I was paying attention then. It was 13% in DC for public schools, 9% in Baltimore graduation rate. And what does graduation mean? A lot of these people are functionally literate when they come out. So Alexis de Tocqueville came to America, the Frenchman, and studied America in the 1820s and wrote, of course, this famous work, Democracy in America. And he talked about a couple of things about America that were very unique that you didn't find in Europe and elsewhere. That was where the focus of the time was, Europe, the world. He said, number one is that America has the strongest institutions you'll ever find with civic participation. But he wasn't talking about the Supreme Court and the police and our he was talking about the Kiwanis and the Lions Club and the Better Business Bureau and the Boy Scouts. Oh, I'm sorry, the Scouts of America. They're not the Boy Scouts anymore. But anyway, things like that. And the other thing he said about America, he said, everywhere he went, small villages, little towns, big cities, Philadelphia, little towns in Pennsylvania, in Virginia. Even farmers were capable of quoting Plato. They were educated and they didn't go to public schools. Now, this is my adding. They didn't go to public schools. They went to little, they were taught at home or they went to one room schoolhouse or something like that, but mostly taught at home. We had a literate society, an armed society that knew its rights, that understood natural law, that could quote philosophers and understood how the world worked. Today, people don't even know what the heck Title 42 is. It's not rocket science. I had to explain it to my audience, not this audience, but other audiences. It's insane. When Joe Biden says he's cut the deficit, and people just fall for it. Or when the news media says Donald Trump was convicted in the E. John Carroll rape case, wasn't convicted. He's found liable by a court that had no evidence presented to it, but he wasn't even, he's liable, not convicted. It just shows the level of ignorance, and it's pretty frightening about what people do and don't learn. And I will admit that my public education may have been good, but it wasn't great. My father had to study Latin and Greek in public school when in the 50s. I didn't have to study that. I didn't even have to study a foreign language graduate high school. I did, but I didn't have to. So that, and let me tie it to South Africa. The ANC, instead of educating South Africans, has ruined education. 30% passing mark in two subjects, 40% in your first language, and then you can move on to university. That's insane. Any thoughts on education, and the impact it may be having on where we're at?
Well, you hit the nail on the head there. Just look at the recent graduation statistics of the medical school in South Africa. They had a whopping 100% failure rate. 100% failure rate of the medical students. And I mean, and now that's because the tests are racist. Can you get over that? So no, it's got nothing to do with it. It's because they are sending people to university based on their skin color and not based on their brain power. Now, I have met incredibly smart black people, and I've met incredibly smart white people, and I've met incredibly stupid white people, and I've met incredibly stupid black people too. It's got nothing to do with your skin color. But because it's a political agenda, they are picking the stupidest of the black people and sending them to university to fill the seats. to stop the people that can actually achieve to get that spot, and then just dumbing the whole situation down. I know there's a bunch of Indian people in Durban that is building a medical school now in Mozambique. So that is going to be something that they wouldn't, and then send the people that can actually become doctors to that university. So yeah, we're going to just have to make our own plans and get our own private stuff done. That's it. But there's my two cents. Thank you so much, Chris.
No, it's my pleasure. You know, real quick before I go, Alex Newman says, take your kids out of school. Take your kids out of school. Educate them at home or put them in a parochial school, but take them out because there's no hope. And I'm starting to lean that way about public school. And then in South Africa, the Solidarity started SoulTech to train people, Afrikaans speakers, into technical skills. And maybe that's the answer, devolution, decentralization. And we try to survive on our own without these big central governments. But Brandy Wells, it's been a pleasure. I think you were treated fairly on this program. Yes.
Oh, yes. I was. You made me feel special. Thank you, everybody. I was every now and again looking at the chat. It was down there. So it looked like I was watching tennis, but yeah, it was a blast being on your show. Thank you so much. And we'll be speaking to you when you come back.
Yep, thanks a lot, Brandy. And that, for folks, I believe will be on the 30th of May. That should be happening. I'll be back on John B. Wells Caravan of Midnight. A quick question for that. Now, when that's live, can people watch that or listen to that on YouTube while it's live? Yes. But then they have to be paying members to watch it after it's aired, correct?
No, you can go to Rumble. The only reason we stream it live on YouTube and then delete it straight after, because, you know, if it stays up more than 2 minutes, we'll get a strike on the channel. We've already had two strikes. Yeah. So we just stream it and then delete it. But it's just, the full stream stays up on Rumble. So just go to Rumble, John, search for John B. Wells. All his streams are there. But if you go to ZooTalk, ZUtalk.com, then and you subscribe, you become a paying member, then you can automatically download the file at the next day. We take out all the commercials and the noise and the music and, you know, the radio station jingles and all of that. And you just get the pure conversation and you get it as a file, MP3, you download it, listen to it, and delete it afterwards. So,
all right. That's brilliant. Thanks. I think it was clear to a lot of folks who were asking questions. I didn't know the answer. So thanks for that. And folks, in the description of the video, I was short pressed for time because I didn't see Brandy's email. And so I wasn't sure if we were still going forward today with scheduling conflicts. So I just set this up while the Sharks game was on at halftime. I was setting up the stream. So I will put her bio information in the description afterwards. And Brandy, if there's any social media links, Twitter, either John or yourself, that you want to share, please send those to me in WhatsApp after you go off. And I'll load that up so people can get to it, because people are asking, how do we contact Brandy? How do we get in touch with them? Yeah. And then somebody, Light Rain, says, John Wells is on Rumble. See, Rumble.
Yeah.
There you go. All right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, Donkey. Have a lovely evening. I'll let you drop off and I'll close off. Folks, Brandy Wells, that was a pleasure. I'll let her drop off there and then I'll wrap up the stream and go collect my steam crabs because I'm hungry. Let me help her out there. I think she might be. Oh, there she goes. Okay, she got it. Okay, cool. Well, there you go, folks. I hope that you found that. What's going on there? Okay, so hang on a second here. All right, there we go. I hope you found that informative and interesting. We did our best to not get in trouble with the censors, but Rita Walter says, thank you for very informative, live, great stuff. Yeah, cool. Thanks. And yeah, I'm getting very hungry. Steam crabs, picking up at 4 o'clock. By 4:30, I'll be chowing down on those. Love to have Brandy on again. Well, I'll ask her if she wants to come back on. There you go. I'll try to do that. Tootsies, says Hendo. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks a lot. That'll do it for today. I've had two Rugby Rockets. Don't forget tomorrow on Rugby Ascendant, we've got the semifinals of the United Rugby Championship. It's the Stormers, my Stormers, in Cape Town at Greenpoint Stadium, the mother city, hosting Connacht, the upstart Connacht, who could beat them. Let's hope it doesn't happen. And then after that, it's Leinster hosting the chippy Munster side, who've eliminated a couple teams, and now Munster has risen up to the semifinal. So we'll see what happens. Tomorrow we'll know by late afternoon my time, early evening time, South Africa, who the finalists will be for the URC Championship. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Appreciate your support for the channel. Be sure to give us a like, leave a comment behind, and we'll catch you next time right here on, what are we on? It's not Night Owls. It's not the Indaba News. Now, it's Chris White Africa, and it's a pleasure to have you all with me. I really enjoyed it. And thanks, my thanks to Brandy Wells and to John B. Wells, who became, I don't want to say an unwilling, but maybe an unwitting participant in the program there for a period as he slid through. Thanks a lot, everybody. Cheers.